Hi, this is your play button. Thank you for pressing me. However, if you are under the age of 18, are not terribly broad-minded, or have a boss at work who likes you less than a tax audit, then I would encourage you to press my cousin, the stop button. Otherwise, welcome to Ypres Choice.
Suspicious auditory stimulus detected.
Welcome to Ypres Choice. Anime and manga discussions, reviews and previews. For more insightful discussions, I'd suggest you go elsewhere, folks. Besides, this week's episode is brought to you by Banana Power. Whoever controls the bananas, controls the monkeys. Hi guys, you're very welcome to the show. I'm recording this show late because it's supposed to be out for Friday the 28th, but this is now Saturday, so... I suppose I should explain to you guys what I've been doing for the last couple of weeks.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines.
Well, if you've been listening to the Otaku Generation the last couple of weeks, you'll have heard my voicemail. Just give you guys the explanation, because seeing as that you're downloading the show, I figure you guys need the biggest explanation. My old ISP was aerial-based. It was like a transmitter on top of the roof. Unfortunately, the local city council decided to plonk an 80-foot-tall crane in front of my house, so it blocked the signal. So I had to pull the aerial down because there's no signal getting through. But I'm now with the new ISP. It's not great, so it'll get the job done. Now that I'm back up and running, I suppose we should get on with the show. News. And you're back with me and the news. I'm just going to read straight off the Anime News Network headlines. Sony have informed the source Twitch that Satoshi Kon's Paprika will not be released on October 31st. This is relating to another one that said that film would be out on DVD here, by which I mean the States, would be out this year. But according to this quote, Sony is planning a theatrical release of the film in 2007 with a DVD to follow sometime after that. I like Satoshi Kon. If you've seen Paranoia Agent or Millennium Actress or Tokyo Godfathers or Perfect Blue, you should really watch them. Tokyo Godfathers, if you're 12 or 13, yeah, go ahead. Perfect Blue and Millennium Actress, you need to be a bit older. One's a bit gory and the other one is a bit highfalutin. Basically, that means just, unless you're an adult, you won't get some of the concepts in it. And as for Paranoia Agent, it's head-wrecking. Look at it that way. Let's leave it at that. Bandai Visual USA, their DVD label, Animes, whatever it is, I keep getting it right before I start the recording, and every time I press record, I screw the word up. Bandai Visual have got the site for Gunbuster up. Remember Gunbuster? That sci-fi series that Hideki Anno directed. It was like his directorial debut. I don't think it's ever been released in the United States on DVD. I know I saw it on Amazon Germany with English subtitles, and I think it was available on Fansub until very recently. Apparently, manga used to have the license for Gunbuster, but for some strange reason they could never get the series out on DVD. Gunbuster's license came up, and Bandai Visual snapped it up, and their website is now online, and you can check it out at bandaivisual.us/gunbuster/. There's nothing on it except a page saying, coming back soon. Hang on, I'll read it off. Gunbuster, wait for further information with hard work and guts. And that's probably, is that a reference to the series? Because I've never actually seen Gunbuster. Genion, whichever way you pronounce it, are looking for an anime product manager. Oh, this is a dream come true, isn't it? Genion have posted a listing for an anime product manager on Monster.com. The position involves daily marketing projects and, quote, budgeting, planning, and execution of all company industry trade shows and conventions. Well, it's not that hard. All he or she has to do is market 6 or 7 titles a year. And my final piece of news comes later than I'd hope. It is a later article. It says that the Transformers movie, that's the old one, has going to be re-released again on DVD. It's already been released 3 or 4 times on DVD so far, but the big difference being that Sony BMG Transformers the movie release on November 7th will include 3 separate versions of the film. The main feature, a remastered color-corrected widescreen edition, and it's never been available in widescreen since before, I don't know, I'd say the theatrical release of the film, and that's it. The DVD also will have an Autobot Matrix of Knowledge presentation with about 100 fun facts scattered throughout the film, and a classic full-screen presentation. Popular Transformers artist Don Figueroa will provide the cover art for the 2 discs. set and will boast a featurette on the upcoming Hollywood Transformers movie with comments by Michael Bay and Steven Spielberg. Yosh. And I'd say that wraps up the news. I think we'll go straight into the manga and anime reviews. Join me after the promos.
The town of Shadow Falls holds a secret some will kill to protect, and others will die to expose. For it is on this ground that the prelude to Armageddon has been battled over for more than 300 years. This time, it will be decided once and for all. Coming soon to headphones near you. For every light that shines, a shadow falls. To be amongst the chosen, pre-register at shadowfalls.podshow.com.
Running a ninja clan in the high-tech world of the 21st century is serious business. Just one slip-up and you can find your head nailed to the gate of a rival clan's village.
Enter the Ninja Consultants, a team of dedicated individuals working to make certain your next mission is a successful one. Services include...
Ninja Actuarial Services. Think there's a traitor in your midst? Ninja Consultants' internal auditors will uncover plots and conspiracies in your clan and finger a culprit. Guaranteed.
Crisis management. Did some boastful genin summon an ancient demon and now half your clan is dead or zombies? Ninja Consultant's turnaround specialist will help you restructure your clan and streamline your new operation by cutting loose the dead weight and rotting flesh.
Human resources. Are your ninjas constantly dying all the time? They may just be unmotivated. Ninja Consultants is a demonstrated leader in inspiring ninjas to new levels of productivity so your clan can reach its most competitive assassination quota ever.
Ninja Consultants, the first and only name in clan value enhancement and anime podcasting.
At www.ninjaconsultant.com.
Or on LiveJournal under the username Ninja Consultant.
Or you can search for us in the iTunes store. Just look for ninjas, consultants, ninja consultants, or anime.
Though you might have to look pretty hard under that last one.
Ninja Consultants. We get paid more than regular ninjas. I don't know what a podcast is.
That's fine. I don't know what consultants do.
Thanks, guys, for those promos. One promo I'd like to put in, but I don't have one, for a show called Jeepnified at podomatic.com. I'll put a link to the show notes. Jeepnified is run by Mishi, who, if you remember, is a frequent caller to Otaku Generation. It's good stuff. She just talks about her life in New Jersey. You know, it's great slice of life stuff. I really enjoy it. It's nice to hear like other a person's day goes, you know. We're going to go straight into the reviews. Reviews. And for my manga review today, I have Yatsuba by Kiyohiko Azuma, and it's by ADV Manga in the United States. For those of you who might know Azuma's previous work as a manga, Dio, it's basically the same thing. Only difference being, as a manga, Dio is aimed at, say, 12, 13-year-olds and upwards, whereas Yatsuba is aimed squarely at absolutely everybody. This is a crazy manga. It's seen through the eyes of Yatsuba. She was like 7 or 8 years old, as she and her dad move to a new neighborhood in Japan. Yatsuba, I can best describe her as a pint-sized nuclear bomb who turns everyone's life upside down. Her dad's, her friends, her next-door neighbors, anyone she basically encounters. At one point, she's like a fairy, you know, she's dressed up with wings and a basketball and whatever. She just comes across these two old people. And she just looks at them for a second and says, "Are you ghosts?" You know, and any other kind of character, you'd say, that's rude. But when it comes from Yatsuba, it's cute. And next door to Yatsuba and her dad are the Ayases, whose daughters, Asagi, Fuka, and Aina, pal with Yatsuba. Now, Asagi is the oldest. She's like 18, 19, 20. And she treats Yatsuba exactly the same way. Like, if Yatsuba just acts crazy, so will Asagi. If Yatsuba acts dead serious, then so will Asagi. Fuka is like the middle girl, and Fuka has to deal with Yatsuba running away or getting onto a bus without help whatsoever. There's a great scene where she and Yatsuba are just standing by this bike, or I think it's Fuka's on a bike, and just for no apparent reason, Yatsuba just climbs on a bus and just waves to Fuka as she goes by, and Fuka has to race across town to catch up to the bus, and she's kind of dead by the finish of it, and Yatsuba's like, hey, can we do that again? No! Aina is about the same age as Yatsuba, and she just accepts Yatsuba is different. One of the brilliant things about Yatsuba is, as a child, she sees everything through a child's eyes, and I absolutely adore it when Mrs. Ayase, who's, you know, I'd say in her late 40s, early 50s, she just calls her mom. It's completely instinctive. All the other girls in the house call her mom, so does Yatsuba. Mr. Ayase is one of the great characters in the background, because he's described as being away. They always describe him as being dead, but he actually is upstairs asleep, or he's out working, you know. It's brilliant, you know. The other characters I would say would probably be standout would probably be Jumbo, who's like this 8 foot tall, huge, giant guy who's friends with Yatsuba's dad, and who Yatsuba just treats as her big brother kind of thing, and he's absolutely as insane as Yatsuba. Yatsuba and he are at the swimming pool with the rest of the girls and Yatsuba's dad, and she just says, "Throw me, Jumbo," and he just throws it like 54,000 feet in the air, and she cannonballs clean into the pool. It's brilliant. I would recommend this for all ages. I've seen 11-year-olds read this. I've seen 27-year-olds read this. I haven't tested this out on an over 35-year-old because I don't know if they'd get it or not. But it's on the back of the cover. It says ages all. So, you know, if you enjoy zany madcap stuff like Azumanga Daioh, again, for example, then, you know, I'd pick this up. Only 3 mangas have been released in the United States, as ADV decided to release Yatsuba just a couple of weeks before they had massive cutbacks at the company, so it's pretty much stalled in the release schedule. But ADV have promised that with their resurrection on the financial side of things, ADV manga will be back again sometime this year or next year. So Yatsuba is listed as one of those titles that they are going to concentrate on. So we can look forward to more, hopefully. My anime review for this week is another fan sub. This is because I have just had no time whatsoever to sit down with my own DVDs and watch them over again. Here goes. This week's recommendation is The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya. This is by Kyoto Animation. Off the top of my head, I know Kyoto Animation did major work, but as to what it actually was, I don't know. If you guys give me a minute or two, I'll just pause this recording and I will check out.
Picked the wrong week, quit sniffing glue.
Sorry about that, guys. Yeah, I was right. They are behind stuff like Full Metal Panic Fumofu, Kitty Grade, Munto, Pokemon Heroes. They actually did animation assistance on, and they also did Tenji Universe, Tenji Muyo Movie, Tenji in Love, and the animation production on aforementioned Haruhi Suzumiya. So, what is Haruhi Suzumiya about? Well, the best way I can describe it is the adventures of 5 people inside of a paranormal club is set in a Japanese high school run by Haruhi Suzumiya, who on her opening day in school stands up and declares that she's not interested in any normal humans, and that any aliens, time travelers, bizarre creatures, or espers, that's ESP, could they please contact her. She's more than willing to talk to them. She then sits down, and Haruhi is a force of nature because she barrels through people. She ignores them blankly or remonstrates them severely for, you know, just the minorest of infractions. She hones in on her first day because the poor guy just struck up a conversation with her, and that went nowhere, he thought, with a guy called Kyun. And Kyun is our eyes to the series, because without Kyun we would just see her as a raging, insane ball of energy. But Kyun is our protagonist because he sees it through our eyes, and he doesn't believe a word of this. It's brilliant in the fact that Kyun is the one who goes through all of these experiences with time travelers and aliens and weird creatures and espers. Haruhi never sees any of this. The characters themselves, I mean, it is brilliant. The characters themselves are parodies of anime staples. One girl called Mikuru is a moe cliche. She's a complete moe cliche. Wide eyes, innocent reactions, totally clueless demeanor, overdeveloped body. Kozumi is the quiet, easygoing flake. He's so well laid back, yet knows more than he's letting on. Nagato is the quiet, bespectacled one who was from the literary society, who just doesn't do anything in the club. She just sits there and reads. But we know that there's something else going on behind her head. Haruhi has more energy than everyone put together. Not much in the way of background music, just stuff that gets the job done. You know, there's the comedy title, there's the suspenseful music, there's the title music mixed in with whatever the theme of this week's episode is. The animation is just astounding. It goes from very simple, like you could just sit there and claim that it's because of production problems and budgets, a shot where somebody will not move for like 10 or 20 seconds. But then, like in that episode, or if not in that, another episode, you will have this complex space battle or something along those lines with, you know, thousands of ships on it. It's just, it seems to me that the producers of the show decided, you know, we're not going to show off that much, but when we do show off, it'll be, you know, impressive stuff. One of the good things I did notice about the show was it jumps through episodes. Like, they might have a cliffhanger in episode 6, and then episode 7 and 8 has nothing whatsoever to do with the cliffhanger, and then episode 9 will go back to the cliffhanger. The best thing I suggest to you guys is to watch the shows and to write down where it skips around, and then when you watch it for the second time, you will then be able to skip through the episodes and figure out the chronology of the show, because from what I understand, the final episode actually takes place sometime before the end of the final two episodes before that. So episodes 12 and 13 take place after episode 14. You just don't realize until you watch the whole show. It's a rewatchable series, purely for that fact, and secondly because it's just absolutely astoundingly funny. It can't be really categorized into a spook, a horror, da-da-da-da-da-da, but it is funny, and it's deep. It's as deep or as shallow as you need it to be. If you want it to be a shallow series of cliches about the staples of anime, it can be that. If you want it to be really deep about the nature of reality and where we are in the universe, it can be that. It's currently available as direct download or BitTorrent. If this gets licensed, or if even there's a sniff that it might get licensed, support it, absolutely, because good stuff like this comes along once in a little while. Now, I know, because I'm not that far into anime, in terms of what I've seen and whatever, I'm probably going to be shot down by other reviewers of this show. But, you know, it's okay. It's all opinions. And we guys who give you the opinions on podcasts, it's our opinion. But what you do with the opinion, it's your business. The only other stuff I want to mention is the seiyuu, for those of you who don't know, the voice actors for Suzumiya. Haruhi is played by Aya Hirano, who played Riera Serizuma in Nana, and Kyon is played by Tomokazu Sugito, who played Hideki in Chobits, which is actually one of my favourite series, despite the fact that no one I know of actually likes it. That's about it for the reviews. I'm going to have one last segment. I'm going to do some more promos in the meantime, and then I'll have one last segment, and then we'll wrap this up. Back after this.
Oh, Bryce, you naughty, naughty boy. You need a spanking.
OtakuGeneration.net, letting you see how crazy we really are. Catch us every Wednesday for news, reviews, and stuff you can use for the otaku in you.
So you want to hear people talk about Japanese cartoons?
You know, anime.
But you think the other anime podcasters just aren't nerdy enough?
Sounds like you need to join forces with the Anime World Order,
where each week three self-proclaimed experts offer you reviews
of titles both new and classic, news and commentary,
rants, convention reports, interviews with fandom,
and some hentai and yaoi for good measure.
So search for anime in the iTunes Music Store,
or visit our website at animeworldorder.com.
Anime World Order, revealing the truth about anime, one podcast at a time.
This next segment I like to call Retro Choice. Retro Choice. This will become a semi-regular thing, I'm not sure yet. In Retro Choice, I'll be picking out a title that I've bought at some point on DVD that is more than 8 or 9 or 10 years old. Stuff that I watched when I was younger that got me into anime in a big way, that I think still, you know, has merit. So for people who are coming into the genre, the whole anime aspect, who would like some advice as to what I think you guys should watch if you want to go watch some good stuff. Like, as always, with my show, it's completely subjective, and if you think anything I say is wrong, well, there's always the stop. But this week's choice, I've got a fairly expansive collection of DVDs from pre-1997, but, you know, if it runs out, then I'll think of something else. So my retro choice for this week is three-part OAV series, or OVA, depends on where you are in the world, called Cyber City Oedo 808. And this was directed and created by Yoshiaki Kawajiri, who many people might know as the director of Ninja Scroll, the program episode from the Animatrix, X, the TV series, Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust. He's also in charge of the new Highlander movie, which will be done by Madhouse again. And he's also, if he ever gets finished with it, he is currently in charge of Ghost in the Shell 2, which, if you watch the Ghost in the Shell DVD from Manga Entertainment, there is an interview with him in which he does state that he is currently trying to get work done on Ninja Scroll 2, but I don't know how far along he is with that. This was first released in 1990 in Japan and was released a year later in 1991 in England, as far as I know. Now, I could be wrong on the English release date. The series is set in the future world of Oedo, formerly Tokyo, in the year 2808. Crime has become so epidemic, so rampant, so out of control, that the police division of Oedo's defense department decides that the best way to catch criminals is to employ criminals. So with that, they release a series of criminals who are highly skilled, either in weaponry, in fighting, in detective work, in problem solving. It doesn't matter what their area of expertise is. As long as they're good at it, they get released. Now, these people have things like, you know, 300-400 year life sentences that they will never get out of. But by successfully completing missions for the police department, they get a piece that knocked off their sentence. Infractions will cause the sentence to get even higher, and failure to complete the mission within an allotted time period means the explosive collar that all cyber police officers wear on their necks explodes. Yeah, nothing like job satisfaction. The series was, for me, when I first watched it, and this was back in 94-95 when manga first released it on video, I absolutely thought this was amazing. One thing that always impressed me about Kawajiri is his action sequences are very fluid. They don't look put on, they don't look staged, they don't look like, well, you know, how did he get from point A to point B. All of the characters who react are either sufficiently badass that they can, you know, cut up some motherfucker into pieces, or, you know, they look skilled enough. This particular series of OAVs centers around the adventures of three characters in particular: Sengoku Shinsuke, Meryl Yanagawa, or Benton as he likes to be called, Gambiamaro Rikiko, or Gogol as he likes to be called. They are, I won't say, you know, stock characters, because I've always liked Sengoku. Sengoku was one of the first anti-heroes I ever actually watched who I could recognize as an anti-hero. He doesn't like his job, he doesn't want to be there, he would much rather be a career criminal, but he knows he's good at his job, and that is what part of the frustration that he has in the series, is that he knows he's good at his job, he just doesn't like the fact that he has to answer to a complete prick like Hasegawa, his boss, who equally doesn't like him and would happily enjoy it if Sengoku was buried into a hole sometime in the near future. Gogol is also one of my favourites, as this big mohawk giant man who is a completely skilled computer programmer and hacker. He's actually, you know, he's wanted at the time that he was arrested, he was wanted for just about every cyber crime they had a law for, and, you know, many they had to invent. Benton is the oddball of the group in the fact that he looks and dresses like a woman. He's got a very effeminate face, long flowing hair, painted nails, but he absolutely, when he has to, reacts totally like a man and just kicks ass severely. The action sequences are, as I've said, very fluid. Gore, violence, it's all there. All the Kawajiri staples are there. The three episodes take place and they concentrate on each character in particular. Episode 1, Time Bomb, is Sengoku's story, and it basically deals with the story of a building that's whose gyroscopes have shut down and that has locked 50,000 people into the building. And other than the actual chief programmer who's currently in the building, trapped along with everyone else, the only other person who could have done it supposedly died 10 years ago. Mystery, mystery. Second episode is an episode called Decoy, and it centers around Gogol and the fact that he's being targeted. I won't spoil it for you, but he's being targeted by the military for a specific purpose. It also features one of the most awesome vengeance scenes I have ever seen in my life. Absolutely. When you see this scene, you will be with the protagonist in the scene going, absolutely, guy deserved it. Kick his ass. Third episode, Vampire, deals with Benton. His encounters with a mysterious woman who may or may not be connected to the case of a vampire who's stalking the streets of Oviedo. All in all, I like this show. I would recommend this to anyone who has gotten tired of things like harem shows and romantic comedy stuff and is looking for something more adult. However, I wouldn't say it's as vicious as some of other Karajiri's works like Dark Myth, Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust. Those shows had a set narrative, like you got to a point and you were told who was the hero, who was the villain, you got to the point. But with this show, it's very hard to define who the bad guy is. Sometimes the characters in the show who are the bad guys turn out to be not so bad, and the people who are truly heinous and truly reprehensible are the people you least suspect. Now, I'm not saying that there are people in the show who are meant to be heroes who turn out to be villains. I don't mean that. I mean people who are supposed to be good-natured, you know, law-abiding, justice-seeking people turn out to be, you know, worse than worse. It's a very gritty world. It's a very shiny world at that, in that, like, everything is computerized and diodes and weird outs, and they have robots and cyborgs and androids and so on and so forth. But it's a very gritty world. You get to a certain point in the sociological stratosphere, and after that point, it becomes very gritty and very grainy. And we get to see a lot of that. And that's what Karajiri is good at. I would recommend that you watch this instead of, say, something like the Animatrix Program episode that Karajiri directed, if you've never seen Karajiri's work, because Program is just not a very good way of introducing Karajiri, because he's very constrained in that he got to do the project because he wanted to do it, but he wasn't allowed to be the director that he is. If you've watched this before on dub, then you'll be familiar with this. This is a CPM, Central Park Media, subtitled effort. However, they have imported the UK manga dub that, if anyone's ever seen any of manga's early work, you will know. It's great Welsh acting. For those of you who don't know, Manga UK used to be the centre of their dubbing facility before they moved their operations to the United States. So a lot of the stock actors they brought in at that time were Welsh, English, or American expats. So you'll hear a lot of American accents saying the word bloody, which makes them sound Australian, but there you go. I would recommend that you watch the CPM subtitle version, because anyone who's watched the Manga UK version, you will notice something implicitly different about this version, in that the music has been totally changed. Now, that's not because CPM changed the music, it's because I've subsequently found out that when Manga brought the title to the UK and subtitled it, or dubbed it, sorry, they changed the music around completely and brought a guy called Rory McFarlane in, who brought this techno rock. Now, this is different in the fact that, as far as I can tell, Rory McFarlane worked on a few other titles, but he isn't in the genre of Manga the UK dubs that were, as Gerald from the Anime World Order has described their soundtracks in the 90s, as
shit rock.
So this is a good techno soundtrack. It's so good, in fact, that when I found the soundtrack for this in Bargain Basement in Tower Records for about, I think it was like €10, that's about $6 or $7, I picked it up and snapped it up completely, because I just love it. It's one of my favorite anime soundtracks. Expletives again, wall to wall. Manga decided that it'd be a great idea if everyone had every second word that a character has is a curse word, whereas in the Japanese dub, cursing is there, but it's just not as bad. CPM releases in the United States. It's never been released, as far as I know, in the UK. I don't know why. Manga still, as far as I know, have the license for it in the UK, but they've never done anything with it other than release it on video. CPM, as I said, have it in the United States, and they had released them all individually on individual discs. However, they decided finally to release it as a compilation DVD, but instead of just being the bare bones DVDs that you get from a lot of anime manufacturers, they decided to import all of these special features they had from the last couple of discs into this one. So on a single disc, you have things like art profiles, character profiles, CPM previews, and most especially on episodes 1 and 2, as far as I know, not 3, you have a commentary track from two people from CPM, from the planning director Masao Maruyama, and from Yoshiaki Kawajiri himself. And Kawajiri is brilliant. He talks about the origins of the show, how he got started into this particular show, how the planning went. And some of the show aspects, like the mecha designs, he compares Madhouse's efforts in mecha to things like Sunrise and Gainax. Very good. It's a mine, basically, of information. If you ever wanted to get inside Kawajiri's mind, it's a good way of starting. Again, like a lot of CPM discs, this one has like good extras in it. But recently, CPM have recalled a lot of their discs. Now, this is because they're trying to reconsolidate, whatever excuse you want to spin on it, they are trying to reconsolidate, and one of the titles affected for recall was Cyber City. So I don't know, maybe if this goes out of print at CPN, you can probably pick this up secondhand on Amazon or eBay, but it's well worth it. I mean, it's like, it was like $8-9 to buy from the supplier I've got in the States, and that was like, I won't say that's full price, but that's probably close to it. As far as I know, from some online retailers, you can collect the single disc vinyl collection for about $8 or $9, or if you can't find that, there is still available on some online retailers the Cyber City Collection box set, which is the three individual discs put together, and that's $37.98 on one source, so you could probably pick it up for $35. If you can find it, brilliant. It's absolutely an absolutely, absolutely, absolutely excellent show, and it's well worth $37.98. Okay, folks, that wraps up the Retro Choice, and that pretty much wraps up the show in general. I won't confirm or deny whether or not I'll be doing like a weekly show, because unlike people like Talk Generation, who are just machines like that, who can just pump out a show week after week, I got something called life intervening on my behalf, so no, no, I'll sort something out, I'll get into a rhythm of it, and I'll figure it out. With that, guys, I'll say goodbye, good night, you know, wherever you are in the world, thanks very much for listening in. As always, shine on, MacArthur's, shine on!
It's time to kick ass and chew bubble gum. And I'm all out of gum.
If you need to contact me, you can contact me at eperschoice@gmail.com. I'm on Podomatic at eperschoice@podomatic.com. You can leave a voicemail for me at 206-339-3337 or 206-339-EEP. And you can also catch me at the website at eperschoice.podomatic.com.